Well, good morning. I'll call a meeting to order, and this is a remote meeting, and it's being held in accordance with House Rule 10.01, which is posted online. Laura, do we have a quorum present?
Not quite.
Not quite. Okay. We'll begin the meeting since we're not going to take any action at this point with the members present, and I'm sure others will join us in the next couple of minutes. But this is to do an overview of the budget and economic forecast, and our first testifier today is the MMB Commissioner Jim Showalter. So, Commissioner Showalter, do you want to kick things off?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hopefully, this is certainly my first remote hearing with Ways and Means, and it's always an exciting adventure. It's also, I just got to say, a pleasure to be back in front of you as Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget, and I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, in particular, for your years of service. I don't know how many times I'm going to get to testify in front of you, but it's been a delight in watching you guide us and probe and push us and always keep us moving forward. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And you and I have quite a long history when you were commissioner in the past as well. So thank you for your service as well.
Absolutely. What we're going to do is pull up a slide deck, and with me is Britta Raytan, State Budget Director, and Laura Cullen-Bakitas, State Economist. And we're going to, I think, give you a little longer discussion than you might have been able to get on forecast release day about the budget and economic forecast that we released on Tuesday. The complete book is now available online, and hopefully everyone's had a chance to take a look at it. Laura Lane hopefully will be able to drive the slides through. She is also new to Team MMB. I just want to introduce her for everyone's awareness. She started with us, came over from DHS just a few weeks ago. So we're, like all of us, trying to make things go and keep things fresh. So with that, Mr. Chair, if it's okay, I will move into the presentation.
Okay, thank you.
Great. This is really the first virtual forecast that we've released as well, and it delivered the November 2020 budget economic and forecast. It includes new economic data from our consultants, IHS Markit, and you know, really follows on some work that last February. You saw that and were briefed on that forecast. And in it, Dr. Cullen-Bakitas said that one of the risks, just one of them, but one of the risks of the February 2020 forecast was a prolonged and widespread virus outbreak, referring to COVID-19. At the time, Minnesota's economy was in good shape. We had a projected surplus and more than $1.5 billion projected for the current biennium, along with low unemployment rates. And since then, obviously, a lot's changed. In May, MMB took the unprecedented action to release an interim budget projection to give you the updated information that we're all trying to understand where we were at so we could go to the end of the 2020 legislative session. Due to volatile economic conditions, we at the time projected a $2.4 billion deficit for the current biennium, which was nearly a $4 billion change from the February forecast. Today, I have some good news. As we released last week, the forecast has significantly improved from that May estimate, even as COVID-19 impacts remain. Due to those changes, the projected deficit that was anticipated in May has been eliminated. We now anticipate a more than $600 million surplus for the current fiscal period. And I want to be clear that does not include use of the reserve. For the next two-year budget period, we project a $1.3 billion shortfall, which, while still a challenge, is still a significant improvement from the $5 billion challenge that we had anticipated in May. As we go through this presentation, Mr. Chair members, you'll note that behind this rosier picture, we still have serious challenges. So we have revenue issues compared to where we were last February. And that while an improvement, it's still really only putting back about half of the revenues that were taken out of the forecast picture last May. The other material difference in today's numbers is that we anticipate lower spending. And Budget Director Ray Tan will touch on this in her presentation. We know that the pandemic has affected all Minnesotans, bringing with it a run of really discouraging events and news, especially so for low-wage workers, where the economic impact has been really particularly concentrated. So while we still have challenges ahead, this is a bit of good news, gives us an understanding of the time and ability to act in the current coming weeks and months. On slide 3, you're going to see the picture for the current biennium ending June 21. As mentioned before, you see basically a swing of about $3 billion since last May. This is a result of two pieces, a $1.9 billion improvement in the projected revenue and a $1.1 billion change in less projected spending in the current biennium. This change is unusually large for a forecast this close to the end of the biennium. It's also really important. With only 7 months left in the fiscal year, the state has fewer and fewer options to balance the budget. We are all well aware of the level of challenge of a $2+ billion budget gap would have in the remainder of this biennium. Based on these estimates, the biennial budget can be balanced even without using any rainy day funds. On the next slide, we'll just move a little bit further in time. You'll see that the improvement anticipated in this forecast is not temporary. We see similar improvement in the next budget period. The forecast, the first column again shows the first estimate for the current biennium, which is at a $636 million surplus. For those of you who are really sharp and thinking, wasn't it 641? We'll go into this a little bit more later. But when we released the forecast, it was 641. But we made a small adjustment since then because there was a contingent transfer in current law that was triggered by this forecast. The second column shows planning estimates for fiscal years 22 and 23. These estimates provide the foundation for Governor Walz and the legislature in which to build their budget proposals. In our estimates, we anticipate spending to be $1.3 billion more than what we collect in revenues. This means that while the forecast is improved and the budget situation is improved, we still see a shortfall in the next two-year period. Finally, you'll see on this chart a $491 million change in the reserves. This is not a forecast change. It is a transfer from the budget reserve to the general fund that was a result of the 2019 end-of-session budget negotiations. So that gives you kind of the high level picture. We're going to now take you through a lot of the really important stories and issues that are behind that high level. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Kalambakidis.
Mr. Chair, can I jump in?
He's on mute at the moment. Mr. Chair, we couldn't hear you, actually.
I should be unmuted now.
Yep.
I welcomed Dr. Kalambakidis, is all you missed. And I said I couldn't hear her very well, maybe.
Oh. Okay, how's my audio now? Is this okay?
It's a little better than it was.
Okay, I'll try to project a little bit here. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me here today. For the record, I'm Laura Kalambakidis, Minnesota State Economist. So I'm going to start with an overview of the revenue forecast change, Before I present the economic outlook, I usually start with the economic outlook first, but I just want to remind you of where we are compared to where we had been earlier this year. So the extraordinary volatility and uncertainty in the economy since the beginning of the global COVID-19 pandemic has led to changes in our economic and revenue forecasts. In this chart, the height of the bars shows each of the three revenue forecasts for fiscal years 2021, so the current biennium, the three forecasts that we've made this year. In May, as you know, we released an interim budget projection just as the pandemic was taking hold, as economic activity was being restricted to slow spread of the disease, and as the U.S. economy was contracting after a record long 10-year expansion. At that point, back in May, U.S. real GDP was forecast to decline 5.4% this year. Record numbers of Minnesotans were filing unemployment claims, and the state unemployment rate was spiking at 2 percentage points above the peak in the previous recession. As shown in the second bar on this chart, in that May projection, we reduced the revenue forecast for the current biennium by $3.7 billion. Economic conditions have improved since May, as some restrictions on activity have been lifted, as federal payments have supported businesses, consumers, and governments. Consequently, we are now adding back $1.9 billion to the forecast, or about half of what we took out in May. So that's illustrated with the third bar in the chart. So the revenue forecast we are presenting today is lower than what it was in February, but an improvement from what we had in May. I'll now turn to describe the economic outlook underlying our current forecast. In this chart, the height of the bars shows annual U.S. real GDP growth. The dark bars show the history and the November forecast by Minnesota's consulting firm IHS. The gray bars show IHS's April forecast. That's the one that informed our May interim budget projection. So we used their April outlook, which was released at the beginning of April, and then we released our forecast the first week of May. In the history, so the dark bars to the in the left side of the chart, you can see the economic contraction or the decline in real GDP that occurred during the last recession when GDP fell 0.1% in 2008 and 2.5% in 2009. And then you can see the 10 years of growth that followed. Now look at the right-hand side of the chart. IHS now expects real GDP to decline 3.6% this year compared to the 5.4% decline they expected in May. This improvement is due to higher consumer spending and business investment this year than had been forecast in the spring. So the primary reason for the higher forecast is higher actual consumer spending and business investment than what they had expected in the spring. Annual growth is expected to return in 2021 at a rate of 3.1% and continue through the remainder of our forecast period. Both forecasts show, so both the April and the November forecast show a decline followed by a large acceleration in the next year. The magnitude of the acceleration in 21 is smaller in the November forecast because the smaller decline in 20 means you don't need as high a percentage increase to get back to where you were aiming. Real GDP is forecast to grow an average of 2.7% annually through 2025. IHS expects real GDP to regain its pre-pandemic peak in early 22 and the economy to return to full employment in 24. So growth returns next year. We reach the pre-pandemic peak in 22. We return to full employment in 24. The economic recovery is expected to be uneven, with GDP associated with production of goods having already reached its pre-pandemic level, and the service sector not fully recovering until a significant portion of the population is vaccinated against COVID-19. The outlook remains volatile and uncertain and depends critically on the path of the pandemic. In this forecast, IHS assumes that the rate of infections, hospitalizations, and deaths remain elevated until a COVID-19 vaccine is widely available, which they assume will be in the middle of next year. At that time, they expect the economy to transition from recovery to expansion, particularly in sectors hardest hit by social distancing and safety concerns, such as consumer spending on entertainment and travel. In this outlook, IHS also assumes no further federal fiscal stimulus beyond measures already enacted. Additional federal support and a more rapid vaccination timeline, either of those or both of those would cause the economy to grow faster than what's in this forecast. Now let's move to Minnesota's outlook. In this chart, the line shows the last 11 years of Minnesota total employment. So the height of the line is the total number of people working, total number of jobs with people in them in Minnesota. Notice that it doesn't start at zero, it starts at 2.5 million. The line shows the last 11 years of total employment. During the economic expansion, that 10-year-long, record-long expansion, from July 2009 to February of this year, Minnesota experienced steady employment growth, adding 337 jobs. In February, employment had reached about 3 million. Then the pandemic hit, restrictions were put in place, and Minnesota lost 388,000 jobs in March and April. As some restrictions were lifted, the state regained just over half that number of jobs through October, leaving employment 184,000 below the February level. So that's the gap we have now from our peak, is 184,000 jobs. Note that if you look at the end of that employment line, it begins to curve or bend or flatten. That means that the pace of job growth in the state is slowing. We've already reaped the easiest job gains. Further gains are going to be harder to achieve. During the most recent months of job growth, Minnesota's unemployment rate has fallen from the May peak of 9.9% to 4.6%, well below the U.S. rate and ninth lowest among states. However, the last 2 months of unemployment rate decline have occurred because of Minnesotans leaving the labor force rather than from unemployed workers finding jobs. Since February, 107,000 Minnesotans have left the labor force. Moving to the next chart. In this chart, we show the annual growth rate in total Minnesota wage and salary income. This is the sum of all the payrolls of all the employers in the state, and the height of the bar shows the annual growth in that variable, and it's an important variable for our income tax forecast. The dark bars show the history, and the striped bars show our new projection. Again, you can see the decline in total wage income that occurred in the previous recession, 4.8%. We're now forecasting a 1.4% decline this year, and moderate growth averaging 4.8% annually thereafter. So how is it that we can have a relatively small decline in wage income this year when our unemployment rate peaked at such a high level? The reason is that unemployment in this economic downturn has disproportionately impacted lower wage workers. We now know that a large share of unemployment insurance benefit claimants in Minnesota were from lower wage occupations. And there's evidence from U.S. data that the duration of unemployment, so how long someone spends in unemployment, has been longer for those workers too. So longer for the lower wage workers than for the higher wage workers. This has led us to forecast a smaller decline in Minnesota total wage income than we had projected in May. And that change has increased our income and our sales tax forecasts. Another unexpected phenomenon in this downturn has been a shift in consumer spending patterns, which we show in the next chart. First of all, as I mentioned, talking about the U.S. outlook, consumer spending in general this year has been higher than forecast. And second, consumers have shifted away from spending on some kinds of services, so on entertainment, travel, personal services, the things that are affected by social distancing. Instead, they're purchasing taxable goods. This chart shows the level of U.S. consumer spending on durable goods. So this includes furniture and electronics, for example. This is we've excluded cars and medical devices here. The dark dashed line shows the February forecast for this kind of spending. The light dashed line shows the April forecast. And the solid dark line shows the November forecast. You can see from that dark line that consumer spending on these goods, which are generally taxable in Minnesota, has not only outperformed expectations from April and didn't fall this spring, but instead has increased and exceeded the February forecast. This shift has supported higher than expected sales tax revenue this year and led to an increase in our sales tax forecast. Now, to be clear, this is just one part of the sales tax base. Other parts of the sales tax base did indeed decline in the spring. They have nevertheless generally exceeded the forecasts from May. And so far in this calendar year, or at least from March through September period of this calendar year, total sales tax revenues were lower than they were during the same period last year. They just exceeded what we forecast, what we expected in the spring. So now I'll move to the new revenue forecast. The first two columns of this table show the current forecast and the forecast change for the current biennium, and the next two columns show the same for the next biennium. The revenue forecast for fiscal year 21 reflects the four-week pause on in-person dining, sports, and fitness establishments that Governor Walz enacted beginning November 21st and continuing through December 18th. We made adjustments to our revenue forecast to account for that change. Total general fund revenues for the current biennium are now forecast to be $1.9 billion more than the May 20 projections. That's that $1.9 billion that I showed you in that initial bar chart. The estimates for all major tax types have been increased. It's important to remember that the starting point for this forecast, which is that so far in fiscal year 21, actual revenue collections are $805 million higher than we projected in May. That's reflecting the improved economic activity that I talked about. For the income tax, receipts are now forecast to be $500 million more than the May projection. The increase is primarily due to that projected improvement in wage income forecast that I showed earlier. It is a decline in total wage income, a small decline, but that's a much smaller decline than what we had forecast in May. So the wage income, we're forecasting a decline, but that improves the income tax forecast because it's a smaller decline than what we forecast in May. Sales tax revenue is now forecast to be $808 million more than the prior projection. The higher forecast is consistent with that shift in consumer spending I mentioned earlier, and it's also due to the higher tax collections so far in this fiscal year. Same story for the corporate tax. That's projected to generate $390 million more than the prior forecast, the prior projection. That's based on a higher forecast for corporate profits and higher collections so far in this fiscal year. The story for the next biennium is similar. The forecasts for all major tax types have been increased due to a higher starting points from the current biennium and faster forecast growth in income, consumer spending, and profits. So the commissioner talked a bit about the risks to this forecast. Let me reiterate some of those in the next slide. I've mentioned that the forecast depends critically on the path of the pandemic, the timing of a vaccine, and the pace of lifting restrictions on economic activity. And of course, those things are all intertwined together. All of those uncertainties amplify economic risks, including when and whether businesses and consumers will feel safe resuming normal activities, and whether businesses that have been affected by social distancing restrictions will make it through the next year. In addition, new federal fiscal support would improve the economic outlook relative to what we are assuming here. And finally, with 30 months remaining until the end of the next biennium, even small changes in assumed growth rates in revenue sources can have big changes in the outlook for this biennium and the next. I will now turn it over to State Budget Director Bridger Raton.
Mr. Chair, should welcome. I just begin? Thank you.
Yes. Welcome. She said she was turning it over to you, so I just assumed you would start. But maybe perhaps if you could recognize yourself for the record.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. My name is Britta Raton. I'm State Budget Director at MMB. And with this next slide, we're turning to the expenditure side of the forecast. And the slide shows the change in spending projections from our previous projections for the current biennium 20 and 21 and for the next biennium 22 and 23. So you can see on the slide that overall projected spending in the current biennium is down by $1.053 billion. Relative to our prior estimates. And this change is smaller in 22-23 with a $409 million reduction in spending estimates relative to the previous projection. As you can see on the chart, E12 spending estimates are down $118 million in the current biennium when compared to the May projection. And the biggest driver of the change is reduced student counts. We were already seeing a lower student count compared to our previous projections in FY20, but there was an even greater decline from previous estimates in the current school year, which is FY21. As families made different choices given the pandemic, families may be opting to delay kindergarten enrollment. So kindergartners is where we saw the largest change, or opt for private schools or homeschool options for their students. In total, the student count in this forecast decreased by about 12,600 students relative to prior projections for this current school year. This results in a 0.6% decrease in E12 expenditures across the biennium. While MDE does project year-over-year increases in pupil growth or pupil counts, spending does remain lower in 22-23 compared to what we had previously projected. This slide also shows a decrease relative to the prior forecast in Health and Human Services projections. The HHS expenditure forecast is down $919 million in FY21 and in $250 million in 22-23 relative to our previous estimates. And the next slide provides more detail on this change. So this slide is showing the components of change in the Health and Human Services forecast between the end of session, which is the blue bar on the far left, that's our estimate as of the end of session, and the current estimate, which is the blue bar on the far right. And the components of the change are those step-down pieces between the two estimates, the end of session compared to November. A significant component of the change in this forecast is what we are assuming in terms of the state and federal COVID emergency declarations. So in this forecast, it's assumed that we continue to generate savings due to the federal COVID emergency declaration through the first two quarters of calendar year 21, or until June 2021. Assuming an extension of the public health emergency means the state will continue to receive increased federal support for the medical assistance program in this forecast. And the federal match is increased by 6.2 percentage points during the emergency period. So that's an additional federal match we're receiving during the emergency period. And the increase lowers the state share of medical assistance by $310 million in the first two quarters of this next calendar year. That estimate also assumes that the emergency orders stay in place at the state level, which allow us to generate that increased match. So there are requirements at the state level in order to earn the match, and those have been accomplished to date through executive order. Our previous projection had already recognized this match for calendar year 20. So it's important to note that the increased federal medical assistance participation was recognized fully in the current calendar year, and with this forecast, we're recognizing it through the first 6 months of this next calendar year. Part of the requirement is a continuous coverage requirement in order to generate that increased federal match. So the federal continuous coverage requirement also contributes to another change in this forecast, and that's the second step down bar on the chart. $175 million revision to the previous estimate for calendar year 20 for this continuous coverage requirement is included in this forecast. In May, we first estimated the cost of the continuous coverage requirement, and at that time, there was limited data of experience to inform how enrollment in medical assistance would be affected by the federal requirement. We assumed back in May that all individuals on medical assistance at the start of the pandemic would remain on the program for the duration. Now we have 6 months of data and we have experience during this pandemic, and we're understanding our enrollment for MA basic care was in fact 5.5% lower than we previously anticipated with our May estimate, which means there are people exiting the medical assistance program, but for allowable reasons. And so we updated our estimates accordingly. The third component of change is, and that's the third step down bar, is lower utilization of services during the COVID pandemic. That was not incorporated in our May interim budget projection, and this change is estimated to be $293 million compared to our previous estimates, and that's across various programs. But the biggest piece is $217 million of that reduction is in medical assistance, particularly in the fee-for-service components of medical assistance. And this is due to individuals deferring or foregoing medical services during the pandemic. This forecast does assume a slow return to pre-COVID utilization levels, but it's into and towards the end of the next biennium. And then there's additional change related to lower utilization in other programs outside of medical assistance, including childcare assistance and substance use disorder treatment. Moving to the next slide, we return to a view of the total revenues and expenditures in the general fund. And this slide shows the upcoming 22-23 biennium, as well as provides a look at the planning estimates for 24 and 25. The slide shows the structural balance in the next two biennia, which means we are just comparing revenues to expenditures in each biennium without looking at carry forward amounts or changes in reserves. You can see that we do not have a structural balance in either biennium, meaning that the forecast spending in each biennium exceeds the forecast revenues. The structural gap in 22-23 totals $1.6 billion, and this number is higher than the shortfall we've cited earlier because it does not account for the use of the reserve. The $491 million of use of the reserve is not in this structural view. And that reserve is already assumed and in statute for 22 and 23. There is also a structural shortfall in fiscal years 24 and 25 of $552 million. The size of the structural gap does narrow from 22 to 23 into 24 and 25. And this is because currently our revenue estimates are growing faster than the expenditure estimates in this forecast. And you can see that displayed in the biennial growth section of the chart on the right-hand side. Finally, on this slide, we do include an estimate of inflation for the next two biennia. This is to give a sense of the cost pressures that exist into the next biennium and then and into the planning years. Inflation is generally not included in the expenditure estimates in the forecast, except in a limited number of programs where there's an inflationary component within a formula or where the formulas are based on actual costs. So examples where inflationary pressures are essentially recognized is property tax refunds, the special education formula, a portion of our healthcare spend, as well as debt service. And so the $1.3 billion in FY22-23 and the $2.9 billion in FY24-25 shown on the slide is an estimate of inflation applied only to those expenditures where inflation is not already included in the forecast. And with that, Mr. Chair, I can pass it back to Commissioner Showalter.
Commissioner Showalter.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'll take myself off of mute and pick it up from there. Mr. Chair, to conclude, you know, I wanted to dwell on this chart just for a moment because, you know, as you well are aware, what you see here is the structure balance for 22, 23, and 2024, 25. But that doesn't include the impact of inflation. So it's sometimes easy to kind of assume that those are the numbers we're shooting for. The impact of inflation is an additional $4.2 billion over those 4 years. So even with the improvement in this outlook, just know that you and particularly Ways and Means and your fellow legislators understand that there are still some very difficult decisions ahead to ensure that we have long-term fiscal stability for the state of Minnesota. I'll just wrap it up. Just noting that the obvious is that we're still in a difficult and volatile time. I haven't updated all of the COVID statistics from today, but I know from a call just a minute ago that you know there were 367 deaths just last week. And that, you know, our positivity rate is still alarmingly high. So, you know, amidst that difficult and sobering news, we do have a bit of good news here, which is that Minnesota's managed our state budget well. We've made smart decisions. We've prepared for an economic downturn. And we're putting into place and have put into place tax policy that's able to withstand the unexpected. Our rainy day fund continues to be at the highest level in our state's history, and if our forecast holds, we'll be able to use it as a buffer, whether for the projected shortfall in the next biennium or to provide more services for Minnesotans affected by the health and economic crisis created by COVID-19. Good management of the state has provided time to better understand the pandemic, sort through its economic impacts, take time to take impactful action. We've learned a lot since last March and April. We're going to continue to learn a lot in the coming months, but unlike other states, you know, we've had an opportunity to sort those things out and continue to tune our reaction to help put ourselves in a better long-term position. So before I end this presentation, I just want to thank the state workers who have been continuing to respond to the pandemic, and in particular, those at MMB who've worked on this forecast, the budget team in particular, the economists in particular, but everyone who've done countless tasks in order to put this information together in unusual circumstances and while they're doing really challenging other tasks to respond to the pandemic. So we all, each of them, our thanks. So Mr. Chair, with that, I want to turn it over to you and members, and we stand before you for any questions or further information.
Yeah, we'll move to questions now, but I do want to recognize Representative Moran has joined us, and she's the incoming chair of Ways and Means. And so, Representative Moran, welcome and congratulations. And feel free, if you have any questions, to participate in this meeting. And then, of course, we're convening again next Thursday with a different agenda. Just want to make sure you're welcomed and feel free to be part of the group today. With that, I do have a question because the Council of Economic Advisors looks at the baseline, the optimistic, the pessimistic. And if one of you, that's probably our state economist, Dr. Kalamakidis, that can, might talk about those different scenarios and the percentages that are attached. And then I have a follow-up question, and that's just how economic stimulus may or may not be built into the forecast, because there's a lot of discussion in the news media right now about possible compromise and a bridge from the current federal administration to the next administration of an economic stimulus package. So how all of that kind of comes together. But the first question is how we arrived at the baseline and then the optimistic, pessimistic scenario. If Dr. Kalamakidis can answer those questions.
Sure, Mr. Chair, members, I'm happy to do that. So IHS produces for us a baseline outlook and then a more pessimistic scenario and a more optimistic scenario. And those scenarios have narratives associated with them. So it's not just here's a more pessimistic scenario. It's here's the story that would lead to a more pessimistic outcome or a slower growth outcome. And then they assign subjective probabilities to each of those scenarios. We used the baseline outlook here, and IHS assigned a 50% probability to the baseline outlook. They, in this forecast, it's not always true, but in this forecast, they felt that the risks to the upside and the downside were roughly balanced. And they assigned a 25% scenario to each of the upside and the downside, the optimistic and the pessimistic. The main thing that's happening in the optimistic scenario, there are two key things that happen in the optimistic scenario to make that would make the economy grow faster. One is a faster timeline for the COVID-19 vaccine, and the other is a federal fiscal stimulus package or a pandemic support or pandemic relief package. As recall, I said that they do not have that relief package in this baseline outlook. They did in October, and then they took it out, moving to November as the political landscape looked more uncertain. And so if the pandemic relief package is passed, let's see, I had my numbers on another set of notes. I think they, instead of, So if a pandemic relief package is passed either before the end of this year or in the first quarter of next year, but it's in place and people get money in the first quarter of next year, it improves next year's growth from 3.1% in the current outlook to, I think, 4.5% or 4.5% in the optimistic outlook. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, that does. And that would be quite significant if that does, in fact, happen in terms of decisions that will have to be made for the next biennium relative to the deficit. I don't know if you have anything that would show where we would be if we did have 4.5% growth or not, but something that if you have it now, fine. If not, something that probably should be part of the discussion as we move into the next biennium.
Mr. Chair, no, there is no direct map from GDP growth to Minnesota's revenues. As you know, we don't tax GDP, we tax sales, and we tax tax income, we tax corporate profits. So I can't say what an additional 1.5 percentage points would in the U.S. outlook would do for Minnesota Minnesota's revenues, but it's clear that the pandemic relief package, the pandemic support money that did make its way into the hands of Minnesotans this year helped to support our tax receipts this year. And so you could, all other things held equal, an improvement in the U.S. outlook because of federal payments would support higher Minnesota tax revenues.
Okay, thank you. We've got a couple of other people. Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of labor market questions for Dr. Kalambakidis. You mentioned that the unemployment numbers are coming down in part because people are leaving the labor force. And I'm curious if we have any measures of underemployment that we track and if we know who is leaving the labor force. And then also you mentioned that low-income workers are being hit the hardest and with the economic downturn and with their wages in particular. And I'm curious if that is different from past recessions or if we're seeing a higher impact to low-income workers with COVID and the current economic downturn than we typically do in economic downturns.
Dr. Kalambakidis.
Mr. Chair, Representative, this is such an interesting and different labor market environment. Those are very interesting questions. We know that the last couple of months of decline in the unemployment rate have been because people have left the labor force. So that's one of the ironies of the unemployment rate is that it can change because the labor force participation is changing. But we don't know why. We don't know specifically why, and we don't know if they're planning to leave permanently or temporarily. You can speculate, and we all know what the environment is like right now in households where lots of households with kids need an adult there during the school day when they didn't used to have to. People may be taking care of sick family members. But we don't know for sure. So that would just be speculation about why people are leaving the labor force. You asked about underemployment, which the Bureau of Labor Statistics defines as workers who are working part-time but would prefer full-time work. So these involuntarily part-time workers. I don't have the most recent statistics in front of me, but I could probably get them before the end of our meeting here today. I know that prior to the pandemic, that was a pretty low number in Minnesota. There were some states where that number was high, but in Minnesota, that had shrunk as that long economic expansion occurred. But I do not know how it's changed in the most recent data, so I'll try to find that. And then you asked about the impact on low-wage workers, and is this something different than in previous economic downturns? It is different. And that is part of the learning, the new information that we got during the course of the summer and the fall that contributed to our changed forecast. So given the level of unemployment that we saw in the spring, that spike to there were in the middle of March, we had 116,000 Minnesotans apply for unemployment insurance benefits. That was a record number. What we didn't know for sure at the time was how widespread was that. And now we know that those unemployment insurance claims have been disproportionately lower wage workers. And so if all you knew was the level of unemployment and you spread that wage impact across the labor market, including spread it evenly, if it was an even impact across wage levels, we'd have a much higher reduction in our wage growth this year, a much larger decline in wage growth. So that chart I showed of wage growth, we've got, 1.4% decline this year. We'd have a much larger decline if unemployment had been more evenly distributed and if the duration of unemployment had been more evenly distributed. So that's how the unevenness of this unemployment impact has affected the revenue story. And of course, it's also affected families differently, industries differently, businesses differently. So while the commissioner said in the beginning, every Minnesotan has been affected by the pandemic and by the economic downturn, those effects have not been even across the state.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my question is probably also for Dr. Columbakidis. You talked a little bit just now about the impact on businesses. Do you have any statistics on the number of businesses that are going out of business as a result of the restrictions on the economy and or any information on business startups? We hear some about each in the news. Be nice to have some statistical information regarding that.
Dr. Columbakidis.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't have those statistics. It's interesting to note, and those kinds of statistics tend to lag the what we're seeing every day in the economy. So at some point we'll have that, but we don't have it now. It's interesting to note that in an economic downturn, it's not uncommon for new businesses to start up, because part of the story there is that people who lose their job and then go out look for another one and can't find what they're looking for, they might start up a business instead. And in this versatile economy, Minnesotans have been very creative in figuring out ways to do business. But the answer is I don't have those stats.
Representative Torkelson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'll follow up to that. How long does it take to get numbers, some kind of information on the depth of the crisis for business owners?
Representative or Dr. Columbakidis?
Let me think about this. We won't know tax impacts, like impacts from tax returns, for a couple of years, because there's a lag in those when the tax returns come in. I'm not sure. I think it's the Secretary of State's office that tracks new business incorporations, but not businesses that I don't think they're tracking businesses that are no longer in the series, or maybe they do, but that would come maybe next year. I don't know.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It just surprises me that we track unemployment so closely and carefully and have no concept of what's happening with our employers. That's somewhat alarming. I don't have any further questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Hey, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and perhaps you don't have the details on this that we could get later, but I'm interested in some of the dedicated funds that are fee-based. I know anecdotally, like hunting and fishing licenses have increased during the pandemic, but other fees may be going down, like solid waste fees. Would our staff be able to get details on some of those dedicated accounts, also including maybe the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund or some of the legacy funds?
Mr. Chair.
Is that
Britta Rayton?
Rayton, okay.
Representative, we will be issuing a consolidated fund statement. I will reach out to my staff today to see when that will be posted. That usually lags a couple days behind the full information on the general fund. But you're right, there has been improvement, particularly in the legacy funds because of the performance of the sales tax and in some of those fee-based accounts. So we will get that posted shortly. The projections should be available within the budget documents that are on our website by agency, but we can also get you that link as soon as it's available.
Okay, any other questions? Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is in regards to the stadium reserve account, Commissioner Shalter. I know you showed there's going to be a strong reserve in 2023.
Representative Knorr, can you speak a little closer to your mic? I'm having difficulty hearing you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's better.
So the question is about the refinancing for the stadium account. Does this reflect that change when it comes to the refinancing that we are thinking about, whether it's taxable or non-taxable?
Mr. Chair, Representative, great question. The stadium reserve was included in that one of the early slides. You see that we're projecting a significant increase in that reserve. Obviously, I think you all know because that is really tied to dedicated revenues coming into the account. So, Representative, your question about refinancing in opportunities in the next biennium, this is on based on current law. So it is not assuming any changes in those bonds or debt transactions. I don't know if the budget director wants to add on any additional, but basically this is really a status quo. This is sort of saying, where are we at right now? Obviously, MMB and the state would always try to maximize opportunities. That is not included in the forecast.
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it.
Okay, any further questions? You know, I was just thinking, going back to Representative Torkelson's questions about business, I wonder if a good source of information might be DEED in responding to some of those questions about what the future of the businesses that have been negatively impacted. In the press, we keep reading about how different business models will be coming forward and changes in consumer choice. This morning, I don't know what the impact would be on our state budget, but there was on the business pages a story about dry cleaners. And now that large numbers of people are working at home, dressing casually, as I am right now, and probably just about everybody on in the meeting is, that's impacting on dry cleaners. You're not bringing the suits and shirts and other dress apparel into the dry cleaners like you once did. But the point being that there are going to be shifts in terms of what happens in the business community long-term with new economic models. Nobody really explains what those changes will be, but other than that, they expect that there are going to be changes. And maybe DEED would be a good source to for some of the members interested to have a conversation with. With that, I don't see any other hands up. So,
Mr. Chair, do you mind if I, this is Dr. Plumkitas, do you mind if I answer, I've got the answer to Representative Long's question.
Okay, no? That would be fine. I was just going to ask if you folks had any concluding comments that you wanted to make. So, Dr. Kolomakidis.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Long, you asked about those underemployed people, those people who are involuntarily part-time. That information, along with some other more detailed information about the labor market, is on pages 21 and 22 of our full forecast narrative book that is posted online now. But the number of people who have part-time work but would prefer full-time is now 137 in Minnesota, is now 137,000. That's more than double a year ago. Thank you.
Okay, any concluding comments from our presenters?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I just to wrap it up again, appreciate members the opportunity to present the professional and thorough work that Budget Director Raitan, Dr. Kolomakidis, and their staff have done in most extraordinary circumstances. We were able to advance this information a couple of days earlier than anticipated because we felt like it was important information to get to you. Because ultimately, you know, we're all trying to figure out where we're at and have been trying to figure that out for the last number of months. We're all sort of working through the fog. And anytime we can get a little bit more information, a little bit more understanding where we're at, that's valuable and important so that we can reorient and take some more steps. This forecast doesn't answer all the questions. We still got a lot of big issues out there, whether the federal government is going to be stepping in to help continue the fight against COVID impacts, whether the path of vaccines is going to be orderly and fast or slow and prolonged. And ultimately, as Dr. Kolomakidis mentioned, that these and other risks have multipliers on the usual business risks that we see in this forecast. So we've got a lot more to learn. But appreciate your attention and time here today because you know, ultimately, that is important for us to make better decisions and work forward. So, Mr. Chair, members, we really appreciate your time and attention today and look forward to continue working with you.
Well, thank you. And I would kind of second that hard work. Some of us have the opportunity to sit in as observers to the Council of Economic Advisors. And I'm always amazed at how Dr. Kolomakidis can put all of those discussions together and come up with a meaningful report to present to us. So thank you for massaging all of that information that is shared from some of the leading economists across the state of Minnesota. With that, then, just a quick announcement. I see no further questions or comments. We are going to meet again on Thursday, December 10th from 1:30 to 3:30. So it's a different time slot than we usually get together with Ways and Means. And it will be an informational hearing to set the stage for what might possibly be issues that would come up before a special session. There are discussions that are going on between House, Senate, Governor, I think all five parties are involved in terms of some legislation that could come forward. If there's a compromise, we would hear that bill. If there is not a compromise or an agreement at that point, we'll have an update on those discussions and basically what's on the table at that point in time. So again, Thursday, December 10th, 1:30 to 3:30, and that could be a very important meeting in terms of setting the stage for the special session that will probably be taking place, although it's not officially called yet. Okay, with that, thank you, everybody, and meeting is adjourned.